You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
As an actress, Mary Louise Parker has won a Tony, an Obie, a Golden Globe, and an Emmy. And now she's been receiving an awful lot of praise for a memoir that she's written. It's told in an unusual form, a series of letters under the title, Dear Mr. You, written to the men who have either played critical roles or been present at significant moments in her life. The recipients range from the grandfather she never knew to a much younger lover to the priest who ministered to her family for decades. It's not a typical celebrity memoir. It neither dishes, names names, nor rakes dirt, but instead is infused with insight, appreciation, and forgiveness, like many of her acting roles. It's kind of quirky, charming, and unpredictable. And it is published by Scribner. I'm very pleased to have brought Mary Louise Parker to our show today. Hello.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
I can't help hoping after reading this memoir that if I do this well, I might get a chapter and a sequel. What made you want to write this book now?
I'd been wanting to write a book. I needed a little bit more heft and a little bit more pages, because writing for a magazine, you have a very strict word count, and I wanted to just sort of delve into something a little bit.
And the acting bigger. Isn't enough?
It is, but I have to have something to do in my trailer when I'm waiting to go to set.
One of the last letters, Dear Doctor, tells the story of a sudden and radical illness you underwent. It sounded like a stroke to me. What happened?
Actually, it was while I was writing this book, and it was in some ways the most challenging letter because I didn't really have any distance from the experience, so it went through so many iterations before I finally settled on the point of it, which was I got to have a second chance, you know, being that close to death. And I had pneumonia and influenza A and septic shock, and I went into shock shortly after I got to the hospital, and I'd asked them to take me to one hospital, and I knew I was in trouble, and they said, you won't make it if we go to the Upper East Side. But thankfully, I went and was put under the care of this marvelous doctor.
Although there's an awful moment in it when you ask that doctor, is this going to be okay? And he said something like, I'm doing the best I can. Is there anything scarier than a doctor?
Doesn't engender a lot of hope in you, does it? Yeah. But it was.
He didn't even lie to you.
He wasn't even really looking at me, which in some ways gave me, it made me believe him because he was so focused on what he was doing, and I did believe he was doing the best he could, so much to the point where he couldn't even almost stop to answer me. And it was amazing because I drifted in and out of consciousness, but I do have very, very distinct memories of watching these people trying to save me and hearing their voices and you know, seeing those intent expressions, trying to save a life was a miraculous thing to get to witness.
Did it change that experience, the way you approach this book?
It changed me profoundly, for the better, I hope. Of course, in the moment, I thought I was changed forever and I would never have a single negative thought again as long as I lived. that didn't last that long, but it did change me, and it did make me appreciate little things that I would not have appreciated and notice things that I would not have noticed.
So there isn't a lot of anger or a sense of settling any scores here. Is that why you didn't name names?
Well, that was partly organic. One of the first letters I wrote was Dear Popeye, and I don't know why I called him Popeye, and in retrospect I thought, well, that's interesting because he did like spinach and he was really strong, but it just sort of came out like that organically, and then it became kind of a game of giving people it made it more poetic for me, and there's something about having actual names that makes it just a bit more pedestrian and not quite as it robs it of a certain kind of poetry, not to mention you do of course want to obfuscate certain
Although there's been a lot
names.
Of speculation, of course. But one name I want you to give me later is the name of your accountant. Is it true that when you went to him and learned you had no money when you were, 23 years old, that he he not only took you in as a client, but fed you and gave you a place to sleep on his couch?
He offered me food.
Where do you find accountants like
that? I
was
starving. I was too embarrassed to say. He said, "Are you hungry?" And I said, "No," but I was so hungry. I was too embarrassed. But for some reason, I was not too embarrassed to ask if I could sleep on his couch, which I did for a few hours. And recently, one of the accountants who was also still working, who was working there at the time, said, "I don't know if you remember, but I'm the one who put the pillow under your head while you were sleeping."
Wanted
there.
So credit?
Everyone remembers in the office that day, this like wildly hypoglycemic creature. You know, I had no idea that I was broke, and I was just, you know, certain aspects of practical life I found to be very challenging in my 20s.
I'm sure it doesn't happen often. But why were you broke? Were you just spending everything you earned?
I didn't have... Well, I came to New York with, I think, $500. And I didn't... You know, I worked various odd jobs and would get little jobs in the theater here and there. And at a certain point, I made a little bit of money. Not a lot, certainly, but enough to where I thought I could buy my something substantial for a boyfriend and a pool table. And... I really misread how much money. I didn't know how much money I had, and somebody had their accountant read my finances and write it all down for me, and it was just like hieroglyphics. I just didn't understand it. So I brought all those papers into this man and sort of dumped them on his desk and said, "I don't understand this, but I think I need to know how to keep and save money."
Is he still your
And he was
accountant?
Like, "Well, you can't save any because you don't have any."
Are you still going to him?
He's retired this year, which I think for a while they actually kept things in his office just so that I would think he was still working there, and he would kind of tell me that he was working there, but he wasn't, because I couldn't handle him not being there. But we see each other all the time. I love him.
I'm speaking with Mary Louise Parker, who's written a book called Dear Mr. You. Do you think that your training in acting helped you to shape this memoir?
Well, I think, you know, everything in life, every experience sort of feeds that your imagination. And certainly...
I was just thinking about showing rather than telling.
Oh, that's interesting. Well, it certainly gave me a lot of experiences to write about. and working with... I've worked with so many amazing playwrights, Craig Lucas and, you know, Simon Stevens and Paula Vogel. There's just, you know... people who have really just added to my appreciation for the written word, and they're the reason that I love going to the theater every night, is being able to say their words and find new rhythm within them and to mine them for.
I'm also thinking about the fact that the whole business of the fourth wall, where you're talking to somebody, but we're all watching.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's why I don't like to do theater outside, because I always feel like you have to have at least three. Well, you have to have a ceiling.
So theater outside in the round
does not appeal to me. I need an exit sign and a ceiling. I don't like to act in weather.
So you don't want to do Shakespeare in the Park?
Not necessarily. I do enjoy seeing it from time to time, but I'm not interested in acting outside. And of course, everything in my life that I've said I'll never do, I end up doing. So cut to me in the park next year. But it's not a dream at the moment.
If Oscar calls, take the call.
Well, I would take any call of Oscar's. I love him dearly, but he probably doesn't think that's the best place for me either.
You have an actor's appreciation of the importance of minor characters and backstories. One of the more poignant stories here is called Mr. Big Feet, about a boy you really didn't know.
Yeah, he haunts me, and it was interesting writing the book, because there were people I wanted to write letters for that, and those letters didn't come. You know, some of my closest friends who I've spent years with, decades with, and those letters just didn't happen for whatever reason. But this boy haunted me, and his mother haunted me, and it somehow. The memory of him sort of distilled into what I kind of ruminate on at the end of the piece, which is this whole idea of existence and crossing paths and do we reach each other again somehow, and can we? Which is the kind of thing I could ponder probably forever and not get tired of thinking about.
He dies in the hospital where your father had an operation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But why all men?
Well, you know, there's only two genders, so it's like 50-50. It had to be one or the other, right?
So it was because I started.
No, it was because when I was running for Esquire, I wrote the beginning, the invocation, which is to you, that big letter, and I loved writing it so much that one letter I felt I could have written. That could have been a book itself. I had so much fun writing it. And it really grew out of that piece and David Granger giving me the opportunity to write.
How did that even happen? Did you call Esquire?
No,
Esquire call
they
you?
They had asked me to. They had asked a few people to girls to do write something about men, you know, which would inevitably accompany a picture of you in a bikini, or in my case, naked. And they liked the piece that I wrote, and I offered to do my own rewrites and everything. And I don't know. They just really liked it. And then they asked me to write again and again, and then they sort of brought me along.
And I gather that when your agent submitted this to publishers, didn't put your name on it, and they...
He didn't, Eric Simonoff. It was very clever of him, I thought. It would never have occurred to me. I wouldn't have had the guts to do that.
But it was accepted without them knowing it was you.
Which is... They also didn't know that it was an actress, which is most telling about the book in a way, because it isn't like necessarily reading a book about an actress. There are a couple of pieces that touch on it, but not so much.
Thinking about writing letters, people don't write letters much anymore. You still do.
I do. I'm really
you don't write
very
emails?
Passionate about my stationery. I write emails, but I love getting letters, and I think letters are so romantic, and it makes people feel considered. And I've gotten, since I wrote this book, I've gotten to so many incredible letters that have brought me to tears, and that are so sweet and saying, you know, I wanted to write you a letter because you wrote this book, from my close friends and from people I don't know that well. And it matters so much to me.
So do you keep boxes of letters that you've received over the years?
Oh, I do. I have also a tiny, vintage doll suitcase filled with love letters, and I have a special box for letters from my dad and one from my mom. And
there are two letters here to your father, so mm-hmm. I'm assuming that mm-hmm. Dear Mr. You, which has a cover image that relates to one of the things you read about your father, that really was written with him in mind?
That the book was written with him? And I think
initially?
It all falls under the umbrella of my experience with my father, and he remains my hero. And these stories are about, you know, heroic moments and just how people touched me or enhanced my life in spite of our interaction, you know.
You write about your grandfather, who you never met, but one of the more interesting characters is your childhood priest, Father Bob, who you say reminded...
He's wonderful.
He kind of almost sounds like Pope Francis in some ways.
He is the coolest.
I talked to him
just the other day. He's had some health problems lately. I just sent him the book and the audiobook the other day, and he just got married to his partner. And he's just a remarkable man, and he I think he altered the course of my entire life. I was 9 years old, and I asked him a question about God, and he took a moment to respond and really, really thought about it. And within that just sort of informed me that religion and spirituality was something that you could consider.
And what question did you ask him?
I asked him. I said, "Is there anyone in hell?" We were still in church. I reached up and I pulled on his robe and pulled him over, and he stopped and he came over, and he really stopped and considered it.
Were you aware that he was gay at a certain point?
I remember I kept asking, why doesn't Father Bob have a wife or a girlfriend, which I didn't ask about other men who didn't have a wife or a girlfriend. So there must have been something in me that sensed something. I just thought he was so cool because he, you know, he had that... enormous laugh, and he was always chain smoking and saying clever things. And
what did he say about hell?
He stopped for a moment and he considered it, and he looked at me and he said, "Now?" And I said, "Mm-hmm." And he waited another moment, and he looked up, and he said, no. And it was like, that was my answer for that moment. And it made religion and spirituality a conversation as opposed to a definitive, you know, this is the answer to that. And, you know, it made everything so less intractable and, you know.
Did your appearance in Prelude to a Kiss make you kind of, give you a connection to the gay community?
I hope so. I think, you know, I've done a lot of things, I think, with those themes, Longtime Companion, and I just have always had great relationships with gay men, and I just, there are just some women like that. I could just, well, you know, if you read Dear Miss Girl, you it pretty much sums up my feelings about that.
And you also did Angels in America on television.
Angels in America, yeah.
In your chapter, Dear Cerberus, you talk about three very destructive relationships you had with men. Why did you put the three together? Were they all basically part of the same kind of experience?
Well, they were part of me reaching a point where I could stop having that relationship, you know, which is still, again, a conversation that I have with myself and that I haven't fully figured out. And it could be three men, it could be four, it could be five. But the point is that, as I say in the end of the story, we're all just poor dogs in the end. And I could be the evil person in someone else's story. And nobody gets out of here without a broken heart, you know. And I learned a lot from those people. And there's a reason why at the beginning of the book I say sweet beast, because there were sweet moments there too that lured me in. And whatever, I don't know what it was in me that made me stay and provoke or conjure or need that kind of mistreatment. But it was something I wanted to kind of look at, and I wanted to do it in a way that didn't make it seem like I was trying to elicit sympathy. So I wanted it to have levity. I wanted it to be funny, you know. And some of it's very dark, but I think it also I did laugh quite a lot when I was writing it.
You laugh when you're writing?
That one I did. I did, yeah.
Now, I'm assuming you're going to continue writing.
But well, I
will
do
it always be in
write.
Letter form?
It's kind of hard to stop because I have, there's something about the direct address that's so, it feels so much more passionate.
Well, you know, the first novels were often written as epistolary,
yeah. Yeah.
Easy for you to say.
It is, there is something really, I don't know, there's something really immediate about it and electric about when you feel like you're really speaking to someone. And then also to read it that way, it feels, in a sense, more personal.
And I'm assuming there are new acting projects you're involved in.
I guess so.
You're
I forgot
gigs
I did that
and
too. No, I'm hoping to do Heisenberg again, the play that I did at Manhattan Theater Club. We're hoping to remount that.
But indoors.
Indoor theater, yes.
Mary Louise Parker, on top of all of her acting awards now, she's getting praise for her writing, Dear Mr. You, which is published by Scribner's. Thank you so much for being on our show.
Thank you so much. Thank you.